Snack Bar Games Podcast. Welcome to Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 232. I'm Graham, and I'm joined this week by regulars Jeff and Chris Ingersoll. And we have three of our newer staffers here this week. Let's go one by one. Brad, our community manager, how's it going?
Good. Hey, guys.
This week
community
we also...
manager and also occasional writer. I've got two reviews this week, so.
Yes, indeed. One of a game that you'd expect us to write about in one of a game. Probably not, but maybe it's worth checking out. I don't know. You'll have to stay tuned this week. Also joining us is Chris Domanowski. How's it going?
Idly, hey. I'm doing great. I'm glad to be on the podcast, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
And Henry, hey, how's it going?
Hey, Graham, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Oh, can't complain. Very excited.
Great. All right. Let's go ahead and jump into this. And Jeff, you're covering news for us this week. So what's going on in news?
First off, we've got the Club Nintendo rewards have been announced. Hmm. And
surprise, it's Mario themed.
Yeah, surprise. it's more merchandise with Nintendo characters on it.
You can get either
Mario themed playing cards or a poster set from Luigi's Mansion.
Yep.
Skyward Sword and Kid Icarus Uprising.
Yeah, how many decks of cards do they have on Club Nintendo now? I think there's like three.
Well, this one is officially not available as any other way.
Right.
These are transparent plastic cards, and I'll probably end up with them.
They have the Animal Crossing ones, and then they have the Hanafuda cards.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
those are the Platinum rewards. For gold, you get a Mario-themed... Or I suppose it's just Nintendo in general, but it is a 2013 calendar.
Yeah. Or
that's been the standard award for the last five years.
For the first time, they have also included a bunch of first party virtual console and DSiWare games.
Yeah.
When I heard about this, I thought, oh, is Nintendo going to start doing like achievements and trophies? That was what I first thought. And now reading about it, it seems so, doesn't this seem odd? Doesn't this seem like something from like the 80s where it's like, hey, do you like Coke? Send in 500 Coke bottles and we'll give you more Coke products and Coke t-shirts and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's our Nintendo.
Yeah, so what happened is really there was a lot of, I mean, it's one of those things. For years, there was a lot of pressure on North American Nintendo to put together a Club Nintendo program because it's been huge in Japan where games retail for about $90 a piece.
And they retail
for about $85. So as a result, you know, they don't have as big a margin here as they do in other regions, but the fans wanted all those cool things like the cool Zelda statues and the Super Famicom classic controllers and things like that.
Soundtracks are available and not ours.
Yeah. So what happens generally is because they don't have a lot of money, but they're doing it anyway. They give away all of the lower cost products that they were already making in Japan and Europe. Like, if you notice, like, for example, the Animal Crossing cards all have the characters' names in Japanese because it's totally just the Japanese cards. It's like, hey, here.
So wait, we're the dumping ground?
Yes.
I never knew that.
This is not news.
I think the whole concept of Club Nintendo is good. But it's better for buying stuff with the coins that you get from registering games than it is for the annual gold and platinum stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, I have about four rewards in my house right now. I have the blue Terry Cloth towel. I have the remote caddy, which I use to hold my Motion Plus because I have a remote charging stand, so my remotes don't need a caddy. Yeah. And I got one of those reversible pouches for my DSi XL. And I have a very neat game case for my DS games. It also has a metallic stylus that I could use as a weapon if I want to. That one is no longer available in the Club Nintendo thing. But I've turned my Nintendo loyalty into some neat things. Although the problem has been, at least as far as I'm still concerned, is that it's only Nintendo published titles that get the codes. I guess for the 3DS and Wii titles going forward, they've expanded that to third party stuff, like especially exclusives. But when I pick up like Ghost Trick, nothing.
Some other publishers have a similar thing. Like, I know Square Enix does it.
Yeah, though Square Enix doesn't really have much of a reward system as much as they have. If you buy all of our games, then we'll give you some stickers.
Yeah.
It's well, like that sounds totally to reach worth it. Like you have to get like 900 points in a year, and like that's spending like $900 on Square Enix games in a year. And like they immediately expire, and it's only for the year end thing. We won't go into that. That's a different thing. But I always get the really like the playable stuff as the rewards, and I like the idea of them giving away game codes, though they've increased the price and then done things like, you know, instead of giving away an actual game, they give a 200 point like one part of Electroplankton instead this month. It's not great.
Yeah.
But I have the Game & Watch collections and the Game & Watch.
The ball.
And I have ball. I do. I have ball.
That was
pretty great. It's, I mean.
Wow. It's a Game & Watch title. I mean, what do you
want? Yeah. As it turns out, you could get an enhanced version of that that you can play on a system that you already carry around with you for 400 fewer points. So. But I have a Game & Watch.
But you won't have just the feeling of having only one game in your pocket.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
I should say so.
But I lived through those dark times.
I owned a Vita at launch, so that was similar.
Ouch.
Poor Graham.
It was hot chess golf, so it was all right.
But
no, what I really want them to give away is they made that WiiWare game, Girl Off with Ultra Hand. What I want is for them to have an Ultra Hand. Because that was like their first toy. Like, you know, they were a playing card company until like the late 50s or so. And then Gunpei Yokoi, just like random engineer, he's just like, hey, I'll make this little grabby thing in the factory. And he's like, let's make this a kid's toy. So I want an actual Ultra Hand. They actually, I think one of the WarioWare games had an Ultra Hand minigame in there somewhere or something like that. But
yeah, I believe that was in Twisted, I think.
Yeah, it was in one of them. I don't remember which. But I just want them to give stuff away like that that's really about like their history and things. And that's probably why they give away playing cards.
Well, the Game & Watch is the nice
certainly
start.
Why they give away the Hanafuda cards.
Yeah. It's just weird because, like, I mean, in North America, I guess we can forget because they aren't really doing that here, but in Japan they still have a pretty healthy business being like the largest playing card distributor because they have like the Disney license and they have like they don't really even make Nintendo branded playing cards over there. It's really just that they happen to make playing cards. It's a little strange.
To me this is strange timing though. I mean, what do we have a launch date for the Wii U?
Holiday.
Right. So I guess with this they wanted to hit the ground running, which I understand, but at the same time the Wii, in terms of games coming out, is almost dead. The Wii U isn't launching for 6 months, so it just seems like a strange time for them to introduce this. I don't think it's a bad idea.
This isn't the introduction. This is the year has always ended. The Club Nintendo year always ends in June.
Right.
I see. Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
I guess it's the dead season as far as release is concerned, so they might as well reset everything. Like you said, it was really tough for me to hit platinum this year. I had to buy some games. Like I went back and I got Bowser's Inside Story. I picked up some WiiWare. I scrimped and scrimped. Just slide
so
across that 600 point. Yeah, I know.
Too bad because last story is coming out pretty soon, and that wouldn't be a bad one to pick up either. But I think that's coming out. And
it may not even have a code. XE published, it may not have the code. Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, that's too bad.
It might again, be because it's Nintendo is involved.
Maybe. Although, like I said, I just barely slid across the 600 point threshold this year, but next year, 2DSi, 3DS XLs, a Wii U, all the games, party title, I'm going to have 800.
Yeah. Okay. I think it'll be double platinum.
Right.
And remember, you can coins last 2 years from when you put them in.
I don't have any coins that are expiring.
Yeah, they are fixing that, basically. So by the end of this year, it will be like, you have to use all this stuff. So.
Yeah, because what people do now is they'll sit on codes.
Yeah.
And put them in, like, in June or whatever. And just get over the threshold so that they can keep getting platinum every year.
Used to be able to sit on the post-play surveys for, like, a month, years. Yeah. I still have a couple of post-play surveys that are not expiring until, like, maybe 2014.
Yeah. But
they're still
just
asking me to review Super Mario 64 DS.
Oh, man, it's I'm still being haunted by a misclick saying that I was intending to buy Fossil Fighters.
Yep. I did some things where it's like, I intended to get Soul Silver, but I ended up with Heart Gold, so they're still asking me, like, I'm sorry, I really wish I could remove this from my list, but you're not letting me do that.
You're cheating on your Pokemon.
Yeah. But anyway, I do wish there was, like, some sort of, like, super platinum level where they give you the thing you really want, but then you just have to buy, like, everything. Because I could do that, like, 1 year, be like, all right, you're going to give me the Super Famicom Classic Controller, but I need to get, like, 1,400 points. Okay, I'll probably be able to do that if I, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that'd be worth it.
That's how they could get people to redeem their coins. Yeah. Is
but at that point, I could just Japanese buy it for, like, $60 on eBay. So maybe not that is a good idea. All right. More news.
Possible new PS3.
Yeah.
Sony has filed with the FCC for a new, slimmer PS3 hardware design.
It's nice. Slimmer. It's going to be concave, isn't it?
This is seriously? It can't go much slimmer.
I have no idea the
I believe what it was is it looks like a smaller original version PS3 to the point where, like, it will be less square and deep. But I don't know what I mean. I don't know if they're what I've heard is they may be taking out the modular hard drive and having one that's dedicated and therefore can be smaller. I don't know.
Yeah, it could even be like a lower budget version.
Yeah, I think that, if anything, they will be going for a lower budget version. I mean, they did it with the PSP, even though that latest PSP only got released in Europe. And it still shows that they're sort of gravitating towards budget models later in their system's lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could kind of see it as a version of the PS3 that it doesn't have a replaceable hard drive, and the hard drive might be smaller.
Yeah.
But it's intended for people, like, most of the people who would replace console hard drive probably have a PS3 by this point.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, they're probably trying to target, I mean, people that, you know, are on a budget or maybe aren't as hardcore about it. You'll almost certainly see, I would think, another price drop before the PS4 or whatever they're going to call it comes out. So this actually seems like a pretty good move.
Yeah. I mean, this is a very traditional thing for console manufacturers. I mean, just recently that happened with the Wii, where they got rid of the GameCube ports and, like, downgraded the components so it can't sit sideways. And then, you know, going back to, like, you know, the late model NES.
Sure.
That, you know, yeah, I mean, there were three different Genesis models that the PS2 Slim didn't support hard drives, right? I mean, you know, there's a lot of that's just kind of how the cycle works. But we don't know if this is an actual thing. Probably is, because otherwise, why? It doesn't seem. I mean, like, if you're gonna make something up, it's like, yeah, all right. Like, it's not particularly exciting. It's like, yeah, okay. I guess they're maybe PS3 is a little different now.
Okay. Yeah, I doubt they're looking to generate buzz off this news, right? It's not as if they're trademarking ChronoFlash.com like Square Enix did a long time ago. don't get me started. It's a sore subject, but. Yeah, they're not really going to get a lot of news out of this. It actually seems like something they're going to pursue. I agree with you, Graham.
Yeah. Okay, then. Hey, more news, Jeff.
Somewhat related to our talk about the 3DS XL, the Japanese magazine Famitsu has shown a picture of an even bigger Circle Pad Pro.
Yep.
So, wait, they're basically just trying to make 3DS look like a Lynx now, aren't they?
If they made it actually look like a Lynx, like they made the, like, Famicom Game Boy Micro, I would buy the Lynx 3DS XL. They would have no reason to do that, but I'd buy it.
I like to think the Circle Pad Pro is a myth that's perpetuated by GameStop and Nintendo, because I've never seen one. I've asked numerous times, and I just give up. There's one in Arkansas, and that's the only one, like, on the side of the Mississippi. So I thought it was funny that they showed a picture of this, because I'm I'm sure I'll never see one.
It's like Nessie. It's like
exactly.
People insist that the Super Metro exists.
No, what it's really like is it's like Metroid Prime Trilogy.
Hey, I own Metroid Prime.
Hey,
so do I.
You can go into most GameStops right now and find one because they're selling it pre-owned for $90.
Oh, is it 90?
I mean, it might be down to 80 now, but yeah, it's like, guys, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad I got mine for 40.
Yes, you are.
You got the Metroid Prime Trilogy for $40?
At a game store other than GameStop.
What a steal. That's an awesome deal.
Yeah.
I'd say.
I paid 50 for mine used.
Yeah, I paid 50 off eBay for mine. Great cheap.
That's still pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, there are only really a few of those games in Nintendo history that have kind of just notoriously gone up. I'm trying to think. Like,
I own quite a few. Like, the Scars of Arcadia Legends is expensive. For...
I'm just thinking, like, Nintendo specifically.
Yeah, Pikmin 2.
They usually make a lot. Right. Tetris DS was definitely one of them. That was because I think they lost the rights before they did a reprint.
Yeah, where did that come from? I mean, who would expect a Tetris game to be rare?
But it's pretty great. I don't know if you've played it, but it's...
No, I haven't played it, but
Tetris DS is a blast.
Yeah. I foolishly traded it in, so now I don't have it.
That's the first
still
had, like,
case,
the game modes, right? Like the Metroid-themed puzzle mode and the Link challenge mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't it the first Tetris game to have online play, too? Or at least the first one on a console?
I'm not sure if it has online. Yeah, I don't think it has online. I believe
Tetris DS did have online.
Really?
Yes, it did. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Then did it come before Tetris Evolution and the 360?
Oh, wait a minute. No, the Dreamcast version had online. My bad.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Of course it did.
Sweet old Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Before it was even the thing.
Well, so did
so ahead of its time.
So did the Genesis and the Super Famicom and...
Speaking of Sega's woes, they're closing most of their offices in Europe and Australia.
Boy.
Yep.
No Dreamcast 2 now, guys. That's the final nail in the coffin.
If they were developing the Dreamcast 2 in Europe or Australia, then I don't know what they're doing.
Well, then clearly neither did they.
Well, I mean, just if you think about it...
Is there any... Sorry, go ahead, Graham.
Well, I was just saying, if you think about it, like, there was a lot made of this announcement. And I understand that, but it was a Sega of Europe announcement. And so, like, when they said, like, we're focusing on our core franchises, and they're like, we're going to still do Aliens and Football Manager and Total War. Were they developing anything else in Europe?
I don't think so.
Like, if they were doing another Valkyria Chronicles, they're doing it in Japan. Like,
yeah,
you know, Sonic Team
I just
Japan.
Had, I just,
like,
I can only
doing?
Dream of that.
Like, what random studios in Europe were they really protecting that were doing anything decent? I mean, I'm sure there was
maybe they still have a deal with Tectoy?
Maybe. But yeah, so, like, I understand it. You know, Sega's put out some really, like, bad license stuff recently, like when they pick up, like, Iron Man movie games and things like that. So
yeah.
Just,
yeah.
They can stop making those. It's okay.
Someone will.
Yeah, that's right. So
yeah.
We're not going to see licensed movie games anymore if they go down.
Yeah. Speaking of dumb licensed games, well, I can go ahead and mention the game based on The Walking Dead TV show.
Oh, boy. The FPS?
I did not hear good things about that one.
Yep.
Here we go again.
Just as a general rule, if there are licensed materials about The Walking Dead and they are based on the TV show and not the comic, you probably don't want them.
I think that there are two different board games.
There are.
I think one is TV and one is comic. Right.
Yeah. And so the comic one is out by Z-Man Games, which is, you know, a really solid but pretty small company. And they, like, made a decent game. And then the TV one seems very, like, traditional...
Roll and move type.
Vaguely roll and move game. Yeah. So, yep, this feels very same. Like, oh, okay, so why are we doing a Walking Dead first-person shooter? Oh, and it's based on, like, the two incredibly racist guys on the show? We always wanted to be them. I don't understand anything about this at all. But we can move on. Hey, Jeff, let's do a couple more.
Tales of Zillia. is being Woo-hoo! Translated into English.
Thank God. Woo-hoo! It's about
very,
time.
Very, very happy to hear that.
Great.
Yay?
So perhaps perhaps Graces was not a one-off thing, and perhaps it actually did sell quite a few copies.
I know that there was a concerted effort amongst fans to just get everyone, as many people as possible, to buy Graces F. Because I'm a huge fan of the Tales series, and I've been part of the community, and I know everyone was like, get everyone you know to buy this game.
Yeah, well, I heard the same thing with Valkyria Chronicles 2, and they let me down. I think what happened with this was that, Namco Bandai kind of scaled back their expectations. I think their problem with Vesperia was that they overproduced, and then they got rid of all of their own copies by, like, selling them for $14 on Amazon on Black Friday. And then, like, the price went up to $70. It's like, guys, you probably should have sold that for more. So I think maybe they just, like, didn't overproduce copies, sent like one to every store, and then they could get full retail for it. And
yeah,
it's like a good plan.
They really waited for the pre-orders before they committed to filling stores with games, which I think was made it much more realistic for them.
Yeah.
Namco's always had sort of unrealistically high expectations for the Tales series. I think I remember that they released Abyss on the same day, or at least within the same week, as Final Fantasy XII.
That's the thing. Well, like that they're aggressive though. Like they're not saying, "Well, we're the poor man's Final Fantasy." Like, no, we have a good product here. It's usually pretty similar and pretty stable, but we know that there's a lot of people out there. So I like their attitude about that.
That's a good point.
It's not that they have unrealistic expectations. It's that they have Japanese expectations.
Yes.
Well,
it sells in Japan, and they figure they can get similar numbers in North America or Europe, and it just doesn't work that
crazy.
Way.
Crazy, yeah.
But they never. I mean, the only one I can think of, other than maybe Final Fantasy VII, and then maybe another one. The marketing here is usually almost nothing. I never see any TV spots for these kinds of games. You rarely see them online, and they sort of expect, you know, sales to be as good as in Japan, and they say, ah, see, North Americans don't appreciate or like these kinds of games, so we're not going to give them the next one. When really, I don't think that's really the case. I mean, the appetite for RPGs over here is huge. You know, you just don't see a lot of marketing for it.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last non-Final Fantasy RPG commercial. Maybe Dragon Quest. Did Dragon Quest 9 have one?
That's, I was going to say, Dragon Quest 9 did have some advertising.
Oh, yeah. And that's still Square Enix.
That's true.
Yeah, Nintendo did the publishing for that here.
Right. Yep. And how did Dragon Quest IX sell? I think pretty well, didn't they?
I believe for some reason they brought over 6, which seemed like a really bad idea, and I think was a really bad idea, as it turns out.
Yeah.
Well, I think they did it more just for the completeness and sake of thing. Just so, now we in America have every single one of the mainline Dragon Quest games.
Yeah. I just don't think that was the business decision. I don't think it was, hey, we might lose money, but then we get all the Dragon Quest games.
No business has ever started with a phrase, we might lose money, but...
That's right. That's the end of that sentence. The person's fired at the end of it before that sentence is even finished.
Yeah, the collector in me is glad that we got 6, but
yeah,
I could have lived without it.
But I forget who said it, but that's a really good point about Tales of Graces F, because as little difference as it made, that's one of the reasons I bought it, was to try and support, you know, the franchise and make sure that Zillia was going to come over. And it ended up being a pretty, pretty fun game. So I was pleased that worked out.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, let's do one more and then we can move on.
Okay, the Final Fantasy VII PC.
Sure.
Which is apparently exclusive to Square Enix online store.
Yep.
Despite it existing in, they found some files in the Steam registry.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how that works.
I'm not surprised by that. I think anyone who wants to buy it and will buy it, they might as well get 100% of the cut instead of letting Steam take a cut, at least to begin with.
Yeah, they have said it is not an HD remake.
That confuses
me. No, of course
me.
Not.
It is essentially a re-release of the existing Final Fantasy VII on PC with some tweaks.
Yeah, I know. And I think one on newer systems, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, the original Final Fantasy VII PC port doesn't run on anything beyond like Windows 98.
Yep.
And even then, it used an old video hardware.
It confuses me to hear that they're. I know they're adding a few things in here and there, like sort of a cheat mode. But they're not remastering it in HD. And I know Square Enix is very stubborn about this, but you have to know if there's any game in pretty much the history of games that could be repackaged HD with adding in maybe achievements or leaderboards or time attacks or whatever and sell bare minimum a million copies, you'd have to think it's Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I was going to say Ocarina of Time.
Absolutely.
They're so stubborn about it. Yep. I don't understand why they won't do it. Like, maybe they're like, well, we're trying to focus on our new ones. It's a really good idea for your other products, too. It's always a good idea for your fans to be interested in your product. Even if you have people that, you know, maybe aren't familiar with your games and they buy the remastered version of Final Fantasy VII, you think that's going to decrease the chance that they get into your other games? Hell no. It just surprises me.
Yeah, besides the argument's completely debunked by the fact that they released Final Fantasy IV, like, what, five times now?
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah. Like 100 times, right? Yeah. But I mean, seven would outsell four in a second. I mean, there's no chance. So it just,
they're
sort of half-hearted effort at releasing this just sort of makes me shake my head.
And I thought it was interesting that from like a consumer feedback standpoint, so they don't change anything, they don't make it HD, but they add pay-to-win features to it only. Like,
yeah, I don't, that confuses me because maybe I'm wrong, but Final Fantasy VII is not a hard game.
It's a long game. I wouldn't say it's a particularly hard game.
Yeah. But I mean, to me, I think what is stopping Square Enix from doing the HD remake of Final Fantasy VII is kind of the there's always money in the banana stand thought of like we can always do this and it will make us money. While we have enough money and flexibility to do anything else, we should do that, and that's like the breaking case of emergency container.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, okay, we need money now. They might already have it. It's just sitting there like, all right.
When they get back to the point of what inspired the original Final Fantasy in the first place, well, we're going to do or die, so let's do this.
Yeah. Like,
Maybe we'll get like a StarCraft II announcement where it's like, surprise, we've been working on it for 4 years, it'll be ready next month. Sort of catch everybody
I think
off
we're going to get that announcement a lot like the current state of Sonic. You know, like as soon as Final Fantasy has completely died out, it's like, hey, remember when you guys liked 7? We got 7 again for you guys. Final Fantasy 7 Episode 2. Isn't that what you want? Yeah.
I wonder how the other sort of Final Fantasy 11, sorry, that again, Final Fantasy 7 related things did, like Advent Children, the movie, and Crisis Core, and what was the other one? Something Rising. Something to do with featured Vincent.
Dirge of Cerberus.
Yeah, Dirge of Cerberus. Yeah, there we go. I wonder how all of them sold. Because if maybe they, the only thing I can think of is that if those didn't sell well or didn't sell up to their expectations, then maybe they were losing confidence in the brand. I don't know.
Dirge was not a very good game in general.
Yeah, I think Crisis Core did fairly well, but it was on the PSP.
Yeah, Crisis Core
did fairly
was
well in Japan.
Crisis Core was fairly early on in the PSP as well, so.
Yeah.
There just wasn't that much hardware out at the time for them to sell that well.
Yeah.
I'd imagine that Advent Children did okay. That's just a DVD. That doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if, for whatever reason, maybe the DVD, they were expecting X amount of sales and it was about half that, then they thought, okay, well, maybe people aren't as interested in a follow up. But I mean, that was, like you said, that was years
I think
years
they learned
ago.
Their lesson from the Spirits Within and what to expect
you
from their
Final
Fantasy
DVDs.
You
would
think so, yeah.
Which I own. I'm not going to say that, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe they're just using that Final Fantasy VII fervor. Like, they don't want to ruin that goodwill because they want to sell them 30 other games that have just, like, the tiniest bit of relation, like Dissidia and Theatrhythm. And it's like, hey, don't you guys still really, really want Final Fantasy VII? We'll give you, like, 40 seconds of it.
but Theatrhythm is amazing.
On that note, hey, let's talk about games. Hey, Jeff, how is Theatrhythm?
I think it's probably one of their best spin-offs to this point.
Okay.
Just generally how they They're basically playing the nostalgia card full on the entire time.
So it's better than Revenant Wings.
Yes.
It's better than Chocobo's Dungeon.
Are you gonna name off every spinoff?
Chocobo's Dungeon.
I can
wow.
do it. I can sit here and do that. No, anyway.
But they're basically playing the nostalgia card yeah. full on the entire time.
Yes.
And one of the biggest strengths of even the least liked Final Fantasy games is the music.
Yep.
And I think that they still sell some of those old games on their website. So, you know, people get nostalgic. They want to play the old ones. Sure, they don't get any money from the secondhand sales or whatever, but
oh, you can
still order
can still
from their website. I think they have
from Square's website.
Yeah, absolutely. They reprinted them a couple years ago.
You can buy almost all of them on PSN in some form.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Another point. Yeah.
I'm thinking Theater Rhythm is the game I pick up when I pick up my 3DS XL next month, just to have something to play on it that's made for the system.
It seems pretty great, and it, you know, it's a pretty good rhythm game. This is an interesting month, because even though Nintendo is not releasing anything, it's a pretty good month for the 3DS.
Well, it was due to have one sooner or later.
Yeah, that's true. But it's just interesting, you know, Square Enix is... I mean, we have Theater Rhythm now, and...
Kingdom Hearts at the end of the month.
Yeah, and between then we have Heroes of Ruin. We'll see how that pans out. And also this week we have Rhythm Thief, which is interesting. We'll have to see how that works too.
Rhythm genre making a comeback this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we'll see a new Owen down. Fingers crossed.
No, that's not happening.
God,
what?
They're
just
too busy.
To crush my dreams.
They're too busy making money to make the game. All right. So... Jeff, explain a little bit about Theater Rhythm and what it is, and yeah.
Well, control is pretty standard for rhythm games. You have to basically react to notes moving onto the screen.
Yeah.
Or you'll either have to tap them, swipe, or hold the stylus down. The game's entirely controlled by the stylus.
Okay. So what makes it Final Fantasy other than the music? Like, is there... what about it was, like, nostalgic other than, well, okay, we have these tracks?
Yeah, they do the art style, and they have a lot of... which is all sort of cute versions of Final Fantasy characters. And they have a lot of scenes from the games, as well as videos showing in the background.
One thing I've been interested in about that game is the actual role-playing mechanics. That you, like, choose a party and then have them have equipment.
Yeah,
and then
that's
fight
a,
bosses.
A lot. That's a lot like how it works in Dissidia.
Okay.
Where you're sort of leveling up this party as you go, which improves your character's abilities.
Except this is better than Dissidia, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dissidia was good, but it was good if you liked action fighting games.
Okay.
I think this game is really good for almost anyone.
Is this better than Final Fantasy Fables Chocobo Tales?
I have never played that.
Okay. Nobody has.
I've played a little bit of it. It actually seems kind of fun. but anyway. Yeah. All right. So, let's see. How about we move on and talk about LEGO Batman 2? Hey, Brad, tell us about LEGO Batman 2.
Sure. So, LEGO Batman 2, if you've played a LEGO game before, you know, there's not a lot of new ground here, but they did do some really good things here. They were not making it up that it really is an open world that you can drive around and run around in to go to different tasks, and there's a ton of stuff you have to collect. Sometimes it almost becomes a little bit menial, and like, you know, the same thing that's on three different levels in like a building, and you know, just to kind of build up to all these things you have to find. So, I mean, the mechanics are all the same, you know, nothing new there, but actually a decent story, original story, because there's not that, there's not a franchise that they need to mimic or break a movie down into six levels.
Right.
So it was pretty good, and they added in some voice acting too, which was really well done.
Man.
And that added. I know, it's
no,
kind
no.
of weird.
Voice acting in a LEGO game.
I like just in the past, just the facial expressions, because it was fun to mimic at home. And, you know, they still did a good job of telling the story, but if they were going to add voices, at least they did a good job with it.
If they're telling an original story, then they pretty much have to add voices.
Right.
Right. my problem with the voices was my wife and I started playing it last weekend and heard Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor, who is the voice of Lex Luthor and all the DC animated, most of the DC animated stuff. And I'm like, sweet! And then none of the other DC animated voices are in it. It's like, Joker's not Mark Hamill or anybody else who's done it on any of their cartoons. And, why Kevin Conroy is not Batman Bruce Wayne. It's like, oh man, you could have had it and you let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clancy Brown got my hopes up because he is such an awesome Lex Luthor. And then nothing. Oh, but, I said, we've only played it the one time so far, and I'll tell you right now, Brad, are you playing it solo?
No, I play with my wife also. We're 93% complete, so we've got a couple more levels to replay and get the rest of the mini kits, and then we'll be another 100%.
How did you find the split screen when it came to the overworld?
Well, I don't want to spoil my review that's being posted this week, but that is definitely something that drives me crazy in co-op when you're trying to aim a grappling hook and your partner runs around on the other side and the diagonal thing moves and then you're kind of like, things get a little testy in the household because you're trying to, you know.
So that uses the dynamic split screen that they introduced in Star Wars 3.
Nice. Yeah, which is nice in theory, but it especially with the grappling hooks, like you said, that is such a nuisance. And we were having problems in the overworld. Like where she would accidentally start shooting me in the Batmobile, and like we get like
your car.
She got pinned behind a tree. True, but like she got pinned behind a tree and actually had to eject and walk the rest of the way, or like we hit different goals. Like I was trying to go one place and she ended up going another completely by accident. We ended up going there. Yeah, that could use some work, maybe because we're not used to it yet, because we've only played like the one time, like I said. But
well, you know, even getting from like the main story points throughout the city, I think they could have done a better job with this, because you know you're driving pretty fast, and all of a sudden you miss a turn.
Yeah, it's hard to control.
And then you have to find where the phantom coins pick up to follow that trail. And there were some times where we get lost, and then you know it takes a couple minutes to figure out what the heck we're supposed to do.
It's like I think I was looking for Captain Boomerang, and she wound up taking us to the chemical plant. Two completely different things happen there. So it seems like fun, though. And once we get some more time to it, we're going to have a blast, I'm sure. But
and when you get into the open world where you go around just to collect everything, you know, and you open up all – obviously, you can play as all the characters. And there are some ones that you end up purchasing that you need to use to get certain bricks. You know, I won't spoil anything, but that point's pretty fun then.
Yeah. Cool. But basically – besides the open world thing, it's a Lego game, and you kind of know what to expect.
Yes.
Yeah. That seems about right. If you don't want a Lego game, probably don't buy a Lego game.
Yeah, at this point, it's a known commodity.
Yeah.
It's like, Mario platformer, Lego game.
Yep.
You know,
looking forward to this one more than like Lord of the Rings, and I'm sure Lord of the Rings would be okay, but we kind of know what to expect there.
Right, yeah. And that is a time where the voices may actually help, because they're all coming directly from the movies.
I do draw the line where you drew the line where if it's recreating movie scenes, it's funny to have the little faces it's that scene. But then obviously with original story, you got to use voices. But with Lord of the Rings, like that'll be a story. I've seen that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think especially in the Star Wars games, it really added something for the characters to be unvoiced.
Yeah, and I think it also works really well in the Indiana Jones games, where it's like, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the Indiana Jones movies, but there are definitely like these definitive action scenes where it's like, yep, there was that one scene where he did that thing. Mm-hmm. Great. Anyway, all right. Enough about that. Hey, so, Chris Domanowski, you've been playing Magic 13 for us, and you had not played the game before at all. So I'm interested to hear more of your thoughts about that experience.
Well, do you want to hear about the card game or the video game?
Both.
when I was a kid, I logged a lot of hours onto the Game Boy Color Pokemon trading card game.
Yep.
And
sure. Right now I feel old.
Yes. And then yes, I am. And
yes.
And later on, I played a lot of the Yu-Gi-Oh game for the GBA. I think it was, what was the name? Eternal Duelist Soul. That was it.
Sure.
So I sort of know what to expect from a trading card game turned into a video game.
Sure, yeah.
And I gotta say, I had some fun with Magic 2013, but, and like I said in my review, my number one biggest complaint in the game, written in big, bold, red letters, is there's no deck editor.
I edited out the bold and the red, guys. Sorry, it's not style. But yeah, there's no deck editor.
Yeah, it's really infuriating because there's so many cards in the game, and in pretty much every other trading card video game ever made has some sort of deck editor in it, so
yeah,
why don't they include it in this?
Yeah, so Jeff, I think maybe you can help talk about this a little bit, but I think the reason that is because, one, the company has that business making the card game, but two, they also have that business with Magic Online, so they basically have an online version of the full card game, and Duels has always been kind of this intro product that they didn't want to be too, like, overly complicated for people.
Right. I've heard the actual Wizards guys describe Duels as not so much a Magic experience as it is like a fighting game, one-on-one, using Magic as kind of the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, this game is online, too. Duels does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that they already have, like, the you can pay for digital cards in packs and make what you want and be in tournaments thing.
Yes.
Yeah, Graham is right. Like, with Magic Online is very much a digital version of the physical card game.
Yeah.
So up to the point where you can actually get your digital cards printed and sent to you.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. But yeah, so Chris Ingersoll, you are a heavily seasoned judge.
Magic 13 pre-release this weekend, actually.
I believe you may have been playing Magic since
1994. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm already dating myself in the my gaming unplug this week, so yeah. I might as well out myself.
Okay.
Yes, I was 17 in 1994. So, yeah. That's basically the reason I haven't attempted to find Duels on my laptop, I guess, because they don't have it for Wii yet, and they probably won't until the Wii U, but that's a side issue.
They did add it to the iPad this year.
Right, that I am so heavily invested in the paper, and have been for some time now, and I have a Magic Online account that I log into every couple of months, too, just for boredom purposes. But I do like the way that Duels can do things that the paper can't. Like, I guess new to this year is the encounters, which is basically a puzzle-type encounter. Like, you have one guy... One opponent, I guess the first one is, every turn, he's going to play a Suntail Hawk, which is a 1-1 flying guy for one mana. And you have to find a way to overcome a never-ending stream of 1-1 flyers.
Yeah.
Which is something
like
you can't
that.
Do. Because, right. I mean, and everything else, assuming we're using the actual deck construction limits, you can't have any more than four of a card.
Right.
So it lets you, and plus there's randomization, which, again, this doesn't have to deal with. It's going to have a set order every time. I guess there's another one that's... The first turn, he puts down a Helix Pinnacle, which is an enchantment you can't touch, that he can pump mana into, and when he pumps 100 total mana in over the course of the game, he wins.
Yeah.
So he just does that and, like, walls. Like, that and walls that generate mana, and you have to find a way around. That seems like it would be really neat to try.
Right.
And,
in previous years, they've had those, you know, those challenges that are, like... I'm sure you remember the old Magic, the puzzling things that,
right. And there's a new column started up on one of the Magic sites recently.
Cool.
It's, Star City's putting up a Mind Twist, I guess that's what they're calling it, since they can't infringe on Rosewater's Magic, the puzzling.
Right. So
but
those are always like scenario, like when.
Unlikely scenario. How the hell do you get out of this? Right.
Right.
And that's one of the things I very much like about the game, because I've had a situation like that not long ago, actually. There was a creature on the board that, anytime I damaged my opponent's stuff or him, they prevented half of that damage, and anything that dealt damage to my guys was doubled, or me. So my opponent's at 3 life, and sitting behind that thing, I get a bunch of 1-1 and 2-2s that are basically blanks against him. I'm thinking, how the hell do I get out of this? And then I get a guy that when he dies, everybody loses 3 life. So if I can get him to die.
Yeah.
But he won't block that guy. He'll just take half. But then I realize I have another guy that can tap to do a damage to any target. I'm like, wait a minute. If I use that to target my own guy,
yeah,
she doubles the damage done to it. He dies. Everybody loses 3 life. I win the game.
Yeah, that's really fun.
That is what makes Magic a blast for me. Deck construction is fine, and I mean most competitive players are gonna primarily net deck and tweak anyway. But
yeah,
I do like the casual. I have Johnny tendencies to use Mark Rosewater's parlance, where I like the intricate combos.
Right.
But you can like the weird out of left field things, like, and I understand where that being missing from duels.
Yeah.
Could be. I mean, to be fair, until this edition of duels, you couldn't tap your own lands either.
Yeah, and before this edition, you know, wait,
baby steps.
Jeff, I don't know if you remember. I know in the first one you couldn't, and I know in this one you can. In 2012, could you take cards out of your deck?
Yes, you can.
Well, I know you can in 2013. I just know Jeff, you've played 2012. I can't remember if that's a new addition to 2013. But in the original game, you could unlock cards to then add to your deck, but you couldn't take anything out when you did. I think they may have fixed that last year.
I haven't played 2012 in a while.
Okay. That at least helps a little that you have a pool of, I think you unlock what, like 20 cards and that you can add to a deck, or
maybe 30 of now, I think.
30. Okay. But you can change a lot of it.
But, yeah.
Within
the
parameters.
The other reason they have avoided deck building in the duels is largely because, since it is intended as an introduction to the game for beginners, they want to remove that complexity.
Yeah.
And
they want people to be able to, like, say, play online and not that first time when they go online that they're just totally outclassed by someone's, like, totally optimized. It's like, well, what am I even doing? Which is why I don't like playing Constructed Magic, too.
The other thing that helps is being able to just play matches again, even against the computer.
Yeah. It's like you're balanced. It's a lot easier. It's fine.
Like, if you're playing, trying to get into the physical game, you go down to, like, a store or somewhere that's holding a Magic Knight, and you could go up against someone who's got a Constructed deck and is totally outmatches you just in a random game. Yeah.
Or so you really could just happen to be matched up against, you know, that little six-year-old kid who was brought by his older brother. And, hey, look, I just play this stuff. No, you have to tap for mana first. Nah, I got it. No, don't.
Yeah.
And then that's not fun. And you can't, like, you can't enjoy winning against that guy. You know, so there's a lot of that, too.
But if you really enjoy duels, I would say it's a good indication that you would probably prefer
okay.
the physical game.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and move on. And so our topic this week is, you know, gaming memories. And Henry, I'll let you start by talking about your column on this and kind of get people going around sharing particularly vivid memories of playing games.
Sure. Sure. So I'm a real list guy. I'm pretty obsessed with sort of keeping track of what games I've played and like ranking them and doing all that. And I was bored one night and just sort of going through my list and, you know, just starting at the top. And I'm like, oh yeah, 10-6. I remember that, you know, my friends and I were obsessed with that in grade 10 and all this. And I kept going down and down and realized I sort of had this story, my sort of life story about every game, and it had really nothing to do with the actual game itself. It sort of had to do with the surrounding circumstances. And I realized that not only could I go down my list and pretty much name a memory or a connection to every single game, I bet the majority of video game players can. And that connection is, you know, something I wanted to talk about and was very powerful. And it's not something that I've read too much about. You know, people usually talk about the games and the characters and the music and, you know, online stuff. And that's great. At the same time, no one ever mentions, like, oh, you know what, this was the last game I played on my favorite couch, and when I beat that game, I sort of said goodbye to that game and that couch. You know, just little connections like that. So I found that very interesting. So I tried to sort of establish that sort of motif in my column and sort of encourage people to discuss, what, when and where did they play their favorite game? You know, was it during a good time in their life or a bad time in their life? I remember reading one of Tom, I think it's Bissell, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Extra Lives book,
right.
Which is incredible. I love it.
It is.
And he mentions one of the most powerful connections he had was Grand Theft Auto 4. And he mentions that, unfortunately, it was also, you know, due to a time in his life that was sort of dark and he was, you know, doing drugs. So, I mean, that connection, you know, it was a bit of a dark, you know, a bit of a dark connection there, but nonetheless, extraordinarily powerful. you know, linked to memory. So that's what I sort of tried to, what I tried to establish in the column.
Yeah. Now, it's a really cool concept.
And it's fun because I've tried it at parties, you know, a little, you know, just lately because I knew I wanted to write about it. And, you know, most people will be like, oh yeah, I played that game or that game was great. But then, you know, this one guy just sort of started talking about how, you know, Super Mario Brothers 3 was his first, you know, his first video game ever, and how he remembers it was like the only time him and his brother got along was when they played that, you know, which is kind of weird because it's a one-player game, but I guess they sort of took turns and learned, I guess they learned teamwork and all that stuff. So, that's what I was trying to, you know, trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
Well, what might have happened there is, like, I can't beat the stage, can you? Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, as it turns out, I also can't beat the stage.
Yeah, let's fight again, yeah. Yeah, I tried to be very positive because I got to tell you, I was pretty polite describing that Quest 64 part. Those stupid ice caves. I was so, you know what? Because you get this feeling of helplessness, right? Because this is back when the internet's around, but nobody has it. You know, basically, I just had this big GamePro magazine that my parents got me, and it sort of had a guide for about the first quarter of the game, and just, you know, no online help. You can just go onto YouTube and figure out how to do it or walkthroughs. Yeah. So I was on my own, and it was, you know, in the summer, and I was trying to beat this stage, you know, hours and hours and hours in my room, and just to come up and see that I'd gotten back to the exact place I started just, like, absolutely demolished any sense of you know, determination to play through the game. I was just totally defeated.
Ouch. Tried to,
yeah. Eventually I did beat it, but it was a bit of a grind.
Yeah. So anybody want to start? Just generally, I think it's a fun thing to talk about.
You don't mind if I go?
No, go.
I remember one of my favorite games of all time, Golden Sun.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I remember it was just about before I was ready to move away from my hometown, and one of my friends, who had been talking about the game for months, just pouring over it, just raving. He's like, this is the coolest thing ever.
It was, though.
It was. It really was. And right before I was about to leave, like the week before, he got it for me as a going away present. And I played it the entire road trip over. And I pretty much beat it by the time I'd gotten settled in my new town.
Yeah.
Very cool. Did it ever run out of batteries in the car?
I had it plugged in like the whole way, and I didn't have. Oh, and it was on an original model GBA, so we drove a lot at night. And I didn't have the worm light thing. So what I did is I held a flashlight in my mouth while I was playing. It was worth it. It was totally worth it.
Yep.
It's too bad there wasn't a Golden Sun in your car. That's awful. You're gonna have to look at that one out. Oh, cool story.
Yep. Yep. All right, Chris Ingersoll, you wanna?
I have a tough choice. I've been gaming since the Atari 2600 days with my father, but the one I really want to hit, and since we were talking about it earlier, kind of is the original Final Fantasy. Came out in America, I guess, May of 1990. So I and my friends were in the seventh grade at the time, since I continue to date myself. And we were all together. We were D&D players in the offline world, and we had all played Dragon Warrior at the time. So we were all like, wait a minute, so this new game's coming out, and it's like a party? Like a role-playing party? That's awesome. But we couldn't actually buy it, because we were all in the seventh grade. So what we ended up doing was my family had a membership at a local video rental place, which also rented games. So I rented Final Fantasy from them and beat the game by repeatedly renting it with my friends. Whoa. Like, we got together and...
Oh, man, weren't those the days?
Like, initials for the characters, like, you know, the Black Mage was C-H-I and another one was JFK and all, whatever. And we went
you
through,
had
but...
to make sure, like, you were renting the same cartridge.
Right! And that's part of the story.
And hope
because they had
because they had file or something.
They had two copies, in those days, I don't know if reaching anybody who may not have been alive for those days. NES games, when you rented them, had their own specific generic plastic cases.
Yeah,
that they would put the manuals in.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody has seen the manual to the original Final Fantasy, but that was a 70-page novel, which didn't fit inside the case. So they attached it with a rubber band.
Hmm.
I, being a paperboy at the time, had access to all kinds of rubber bands. So I took the one that was on there and put a brilliant red one on it.
Ah.
So I returned the game, and every time I would check the game out, I want the one with a red rubber band on it.
Very clever.
So we went through, we took turns playing, whatever, like, where should we go now, do this and that. And we basically, the four or five of us, beat that as a team. Hmm. And when chaos went down, we were cheering for it.
Yeah, because you could
pay for anything else again. Right, and that was before Final Fantasy even had a storyline of any worth.
Right. That's a good story.
And speaking of renting, if you don't mind me interrupting, speaking of renting, I kind of played through Donkey Kong 64 this exact same way. I remember when I was a kid, I always rented Donkey Kong 64 from my local video rental store, but they didn't allow for continuous renting. So I always had to wait like a day or two before I could rent it again. But always, without fail in that time, someone else rented it. Oh. And I swear, me and this other kid, or multiple other kids, however it worked, and kept playing a volley back and forth with the same game. Every time each one of us picked up the cartridge, like, and a new character had been unlocked and someone had gotten a few more golden bananas or something. And together, back and forth, this kid I didn't even know, we eventually beat the game.
Wow. Awesome. Very much like Journey's multiplayer. You have no idea who they are.
The Donkey Kong N64 is one of the two N64 games that I purchased that I never finished. The other one is Jet Force Gemini, another rare collectathon. Mm. But like at one point they wanted me to do, I guess it was complete X number of perfect runs on the original Donkey Kong game to get the golden coin or whatever.
Oh, don't even get me started, Chris.
Oh, jeez.
That was the end. That was the, I beat
the
control pad.
You have to go back and do it again.
Right. I got the first. I got the
arcade twice. Oh god, it killed me.
I got the first one. I got both of the Solar Jetman ones or whatever the heck that was. The Rocket Man, the rare one. And I just, the second Donkey Kong run, I'm like, no, I will no.
You could
in the sand. On.
More than
no.
Like a millimeter without your character dying.
Right.
You couldn't get any sense of danger or anything like that, because you couldn't. I could not figure out when my character was going to die or not. I just assumed he was going to die on every jump.
Especially like the elevator levels. Like, no.
Yeah. Well, I do have a story. It was kind of an early gaming experience for me. Not the first one. The first one was actually me. I believe the first time I played a game was I was playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the NES. Nice. And I vaguely remember beating it. I definitely can't do it now.
Wow.
I could when I was like one.
Yeah, I was going to say Savant.
That's impressive, I gotta say.
You don't want that to be your first memory. It's like Battletoads is your first memory. That's just horrible.
But so, this vivid memory I have is in 1991, we got a Super Nintendo. And my brother got a Super Nintendo because at the time, I think I was 2.5, so they did not buy me a Super Nintendo. But
whereas
he got,
I paid for my Super Nintendo with my paper route money. So
yes.
That was mine.
Yes. But so at the time, he had gotten NCAA basketball, which I still have an affection for, even though it's not a very good game. And Pilot Wings.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as you can tell, the story is about Pilot Wings. So none of us were very good at Pilot Wings, but my brother was playing and then I was playing and then my dad would join in occasionally. And as it ended up working out, we were each good at like one of the events. So
skydiver, one of you was a rocket, thought one of you was a bike.
Right.
Okay.
So let's see, the main event, like my dad always took over for the like biplane thing, because that actually required like finesse. and then the skydiving, and I'm trying to remember the fourth event. My brother did two of them.
Hang glider?
Yeah, hang glider, right. But I, the 2-year-old, was the Rocket Belt, like, Phenom. I was pretty great. but I just remember that, like, okay, Rocket Belt, it's happening. Because, like, the physics were a little different on that one. But it's like, okay, yep. Like, this is not how an actual object functions, and I think that was why they were better at those than me, because it's like, yes, this is how air works. Like, nope, I have a belt with some jetpacks on it. That seems logical to me. So we'd each pass it around, and I remember getting through the judges, and I remember Lance being particularly persnickety. and I don't think we ever beat it, but we just keep going around, and we'd mostly get stuck on Lance. That guy, I just have disapproving face Lance just burned into my mind. what's her name? The woman that's the introductory. I don't remember, but I always remember her smiling. She's like, good job. And then Lance is just like, no.
the only judge I remember from that mess is Al, the last one, the big guy with the shades. Is that Al? Yeah. He's the only one I remember.
Yeah. Anyway, anybody else have any stories?
I remember being in it was either elementary school or middle school. It was before we had the internet and game facts and sites like that. So every day before school, we would just discuss RPGs. It went from the NES to the Super Nintendo. It was just that was how we got through RPGs. We just sort of strategized as a committee.
Yeah, some of those games came... are straight up brutal. It's like, why? How would anyone have figured that out? Yeah.
I especially remember the first Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, and now it's just like, oh, of course, within 7 seconds, somebody figured out how to do that, and it's now in Game Facts. It's like...
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the one thing I do like about when we occasionally get to review a game before it's out, and... That's trouble, because usually we need to make progress and finish so we can write it. But then it's like the you're just going in like, what do I do now? No one on earth knows what I'm supposed to do now. No one's figured it out yet. It's like this panic, and that was how everybody played games for the longest time. It's like, oh no, I'm stuck in this. Where do I go now? I don't know. Anyway,
it's just more satisfying when you finally figure it out, though, isn't it?
It's pretty great.
Yeah. Like or alternately, it's like, wait, what? Really? It's like,
oh yeah,
that Pokemon Conquest. Do you know how to get the favorite Pokemon for the Dark Warlord? He links up with Zorua, the little mimic Pokemon. Do you know how to find one of those things?
No.
It's random. When he goes looking for wild Pokemon, sometimes one of the random Pokemon is a Zorua in disguise.
What?
Yes, that was my exact reaction.
He has to link with anything, and it'll randomly almost...
No. You have to tag one with, like, preferably a non-effective attack. And then, like, in the real, like in the game, when you hit it, it stops pretending to be what it's pretending.
Wow.
So you have to randomly not kill something and see if it happens to be a Zorua.
What?
Yeah. Which is kind of a pain in the ass, because in the actual... Black and White, you can only get Zorua or Zorak through special events anyway. So I don't know why they couldn't have had a special event in Conquest where, hey, something weird's going on over here, why don't you check it out?
Well, I mean, that may be a downloadable something at some point.
That's how I got Mewtwo that way during one of my random campaigns. But yeah, that is one of those, sometimes it's really obvious, like you feel like awesome when you figure out the puzzle, and sometimes it's, what the hell were they thinking? How would anybody have figured that out?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to jump in and tell my story. So what we used to do instead of having Game Facts and whatnot, well, we had Nintendo Power.
Yeah. So,
my memories were...
Classified information.
Yeah, it was, right? Yeah. You know,
or like the entire Final Fantasy guide that 1 month. I that was a Bible for a long time.
Sure. And, we used to, we'd have sleepovers that we would literally not sleep. It would be an all night. And I don't know. I guess when you're 12 years old, you could do this. I couldn't do it now. But, I'm only 2 years behind you, Chris. So I have vivid memories of Super Mario Brothers 3 right after it came out. We had Nintendo Power. We had the game. We knew
that
we
was
were
another one
beat
they,
it.
They gave a full
And give a full, full walkthrough on warp whistles and all that stuff, full walkthrough in the Nintendo Power. So if you had that magazine, you could, we were 12 and it wasn't difficult. So
they can map out 2D 8-bit stages. Now it's not
correct.
So much.
Yeah. One thing I especially remember is when we figured out in Super Mario Brothers 3 in World 2, figuring out that we can use the hammer on the random rock at one side of the world to get to a warp zone.
Yeah, that stuff is just like...
Now, speaking of all this, and like pre-internet, trying to figure things out by yourself talk, especially how a lot of this stuff happened at like school, talking with your classmates and stuff. And I totally remember that. I can totally empathize with that. Like, that's exactly the kind of thing me and my friends would do in elementary school. And we were like, no, man, you can, there's totally a secret boss in Super Smash Brothers. You just have to play for like 1,000 hours in a row or something.
get 50 knockups in Cruel Melee and you unlock Sonic and Tails. Is the EGL.
There was a secret character in Mario RPG called Bush. And it was one of the Bush enemies, and if you use Peach's sleep move on him over and over and over and over again, I spent hours trying to find that.
All I gotta say is...
There's no secret Bush character in Mario RPG. I've tried.
There is no cow level.
That's right.
Yep, all I gotta say is glitching Pokemon Blue so that you can go to that truck and get a Mew.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
My favorite gaming urban legend, which maybe is a topic for a future podcast, is you could use, if you plug the light gun into port 2, you could shoot Mike Tyson. And we thought that was legit. Like, that's how you beat him, because he was hard, you know?
Some interesting port tricks on the NES, but that was not one of them.
Yeah. It's too bad.
So, one of the legendary Pokemon myths that probably survives to this day is holding B gives you a bit better chance of catching.
I still do that to this day, just be sure.
I think a lot of us still do that just out of superstition.
or tapping the button rapidly?
Right.
You gotta hold it down, B and down, and that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Doing like the third shake, or, yeah.
Yeah, you gotta shake it and hold it upside down. And then scream at it a little bit. That's how you do it.
Well, screaming always helps.
Oh, yeah. It's like moving your controller around to move around in a racing game or something.
Yep.
And then the Wii came along, and that became a legitimate control method.
Absolutely. Yeah. It delivered on all our childhood dreams.
Yeah. I knew some people who did that, like, fake steering thing, but as soon as they got the Wii, it's like Mario Kart. Okay, so you know that thing you've been doing the whole time?
I've been telling you not to do that for your entire lifetime.
Now. Like, just then was when it kicked into them. Oh, right, I shouldn't do that. Like, no. Now is the time. I know I've been training you, and you find okay. Let's all right. Yeah. Anyway, but it's a lot of fun to talk about. Anyone want to mention anything else before we wrap up this episode? All right.
Nope.
Seems good. Okay. Well, we will see you guys in 2 weeks. But for Brad, Chris, Henry, Jeff, and Chris, I am Graham. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter @snackbargames.